Now that is really nice and fresh in your memory. How many kings, magi, did the gospel say there were? Uh-oh. There were no numbers listed in that gospel passage. Matthew didn't tell us. Did he? What were their names? I'm getting the same blank stare I did at 4:30 yesterday afternoon and 8 o'clock this morning. There is a really old tradition that says their names were Caspar, Melchior, and... So you do know it anyway, huh? Where did we get that from? Where are they named in anywhere in the Old Testament or the New? There is no scriptural evidence of either how many or what their names were. So where on earth did we get the number and the names from? Most people assume, and this goes for people way back, way back, way back, that because there were three gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, that there must have been only three. So then where did we get the names from? There is a really old tradition, Eastern Church and Western Church both, that either on New Year's or on the Feast of the Epiphany, depending on if you're from the East or the West, that you would have this marking done over the lintel, the top part of your door frame, a Epiphany blessing. You'd have the year split into two parts, like this year would be 2023, and in the middle you'd have a cross, a C, a cross, an M, a cross, and the letter B. Which actually is three Latin words, Christus Mansionem Benedicat, which if you put it into right word order in English, it's may Christ bless this house. And somebody somewhere along the way decided, I guess, that the letters C, M, B were initials, and so we come up with Caspar, Melchior, and Balthasar. But underlying that, I want to throw this one out. Why do we make such a big deal out of this? Why is the Epiphany, the appearance of the Magi, however many there were, and whether they were magicians, astronomers, astrologers, sorcerers, why does it matter? What's going on? I mean, there are multiple levels of backstory going on in here. Frankincense, gold, and more, what do they have to do with it? That's actually found in the Old Testament. You know, the first reading that belonged with today lists that some magi or kings would come from the East and they would bring gold and frankincense. And then there's another passage, I forget which one it is, it's one of the Psalms, that lists some people coming from the East, kings, bringing frankincense and myrrh. Now, everybody goes to a baby shower and brings gold, frankincense, and myrrh, right? The gold would actually make sense. You know, that would be really practical. You know, a young family just starting out, they've just had their first child. Gold, that's going to be really help to set up, you know, housekeeping. What on earth are you going to do with frankincense and myrrh? So again, you know, backstory, what's underpinning those three items that are brought by however magi or whatever they were are that brought? They're indicating something about the identity of the person. And note that these things are brought not to Joseph and Mary, they're bought and presented to Jesus. They're doing an identity process right here. There's this one that has come who's fulfilling a whole big long list of ancient prophecies, who is a king, gold, who is God, frankincense, and who is going to give his life myrrh, which is a spice that was used in burial, going to give his life for the people. That's one layer of backstory. There's another whole great big one. I did some of this on Christmas at the masses for the Christmas Nativity of the Lord. What's God been up to that it culminates in the Nativity, the birth of Jesus, marrying perpetually, eternally, our human nature, body and soul, to his divine nature. And that backstory rolls all the way back into the roots of the beginning of Genesis. You notice how much we go often back to Genesis? Because so much is rooted right there in the middle of it. When God created humanity, it is with this intention of being in an intimate, like a marital union between himself and the human race. How much of the human race did he want to include? Use the three-letter word, all. And obviously we have this story about the fall that follows soon after our creation, where Adam and Eve failed to follow an instruction and decided to try to take into their own power what to do as humans in relationship to God and themselves. And so everything else that follows in the Old Testament leading up to the birth of Christ and then beyond going to this is God restoring what he intended for us to have from the very beginning, of us and God being in this intimate relationship. Now, another layer to the backstory. Who and what is God? Did God ever not exist? Oh my. Think that one through seriously. Did God ever not exist? Thank you. The correct answer to that is obviously a great big huge go, no, because God always existed. We use the word eternal. Was God or is God in any way remotely dependent on anyone or anything else to continue existing? Does God have need of anyone or anything? A word that describes that and puts it into sort of a nice little handy package is the word transcendence. God is above and beyond anything and everything. But then God is also demonstrating to us from the beginning of Genesis all the way through until we reach whenever the end is, that he is also immanent, desires to be intimately close to the peak of his creation, which is us. And we see him intimately, closely interacting with Adam and Eve. We see him closely interacting with Noah. We see him closely interacting with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, all of the prophets. You know, he's God personally coming and intervening in and being a part of what's going on in human history, throughout human history. And then it culminates when, as I said just a minute ago, God intimately unites himself to our human nature with his divine nature for all eternity in the incarnation of Jesus, his only begotten Son. And that has not ended. You know, yes, he ascended back into heaven to the right hand of the Father, but does he still not continue to be present to us, imminent in relationship to us? That's a yes or a no. The obvious answer is obviously yes, isn't it? You know, is he intimately interacting with us every time we hear or personally on our own read from the scriptures? That's God's voice speaking to us. But the most intimate encounter we have with this very transcendent yet imminent God is in the Eucharist. He is present to us every time you come in here. You know, that's one of the reasons why there is a candle perpetually burning by every tabernacle in a Catholic church, Eastern Rite, Western Rite. It's a signal to us, reminding us that God is not somewhere far away out there, but is right here. And in the celebration of the holy sacrifice of the Mass, from the altar to you, personally, intimately, bringing himself in close, intimate encounter to us, to help prepare us and lift us up for the moment when this earthly life concludes and we enter into the eternal imminence presence of the transcendent God forever. And so much so that this nature of God who is utterly transcendent, but also decidedly, deliberately is imminent, is woven into our nature as humans. Remember, Genesis, very clear. We are made in God's image and likeness, and that is woven into us. Transcendence and immanence into being male and female, where we have this opportunity called upon by God to reflect that to the rest of the world, to those who do not yet know him. And most profoundly, in which sacrament? I'm looking around at some of you who are participants in this sacrament that I'm referring to. Hint, it starts with the letter M. How many of you are married? I think some of you better raise your hand up real quick before your spouse goes. There is this profound witness that a married couple, male and female, are demonstrating to the world the closeness, the intimacy that God desires with us by your closeness and faithfulness and imminence to each other, especially when it comes to the point where you give birth to children. There we're reflecting the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit is mother, father, and child. I said, there is a whole lot of backstory to all of this, but it is all seeking to reveal something very profound from God himself. Again, from the very beginning, when God created the human race, it was not to, you know, let's wind us up and set us off and see what happens later, but God has been, even though he's transcendent, has been imminent to humanity from the start. Every single last human being ever conceived is being conceived, will be conceived in the womb of a mother, is deliberately willed by God and desired by God to come and enter into union with him, not just on earth, but for eternity in heaven. Let that settle in. That's why this matters, because it's also another piece of the backstory. You know, if you go back and read Paul's letter, what did God tell us? That his coming was not just for the Jewish people, but the coming of these magi, whoever they were, however many there were from the east, was a sign pointing forward that the intention of what God is up to is also for everyone. And we are invited, challenged to bear witness to that by our lives, that we show forth God's transcendence and his imminence by our lives, that we live out all of this. It is an immense gift that we don't just hold selfishly to ourselves, but are meant to freely, willingly, lovingly give away every chance God gives us, that all may come to know that God is personally involved and personally comes to be with and to invite and to draw into eternity to himself every single human person, including all of you.